Welcome to another episode of Mr. Jeffrion's World History Podcast. We are now on episode 14, and today we will discuss the Shui, Song, and Tang dynasties of China and their influence. If you have any questions after listening to the podcast, feel free to submit a question. There are two ways: calling the Google voice number at 321-804-APWH, or by emailing mrjeffrion@gmail.com. When we last discussed China, the Han Dynasty collapsed due to internal struggle and outside pressure. If you would like to know more on this subject, you are more than welcome to listen to episode 8 from a few weeks ago. After the Han Dynasty's fall, China experienced a period of disunity lasting 3.5 centuries. The next centralized state would occur during the 6th century when the Shui came to power. In 589 CE, Yang Jian established the Shui Dynasty. Geographically speaking, the Shui occupied a small amount of territory when compared to the earlier and later dynasties, and likely only make it into the history books because of their massive building projects. These projects include the construction of palaces, granaries, and repairing the Great Wall. Their biggest construction project was the Grand Canal, which was constructed under the reign of Emperor Shui Yangdi. The Grand Canal was to promote trade between North and South China. It ran for 12,000 miles and connected the Huanghe and Yangtze rivers. Large construction projects like this would be the downfall of the Shui dynasty because it required charging citizens high taxes and forcing them into harsh labor conditions. Beginning in 610 CE, rebellions developed in northern China. The dynasty ended in 618 when Shui Yangdi was assassinated. The Tang dynasty, which replaced the Shui, began under the power of a rebel who had seized Chang'an. The second emperor under the Tang dynasty was Tang Taishong. Fun fact, to get to the throne, Tang Taishong killed both of his brothers and cast his father aside. Tang Taishong began rebuilding the capital at Chang'an. Three principles were the basis of Tang's success. First of all, the Tang had an extensive network of roads for the spread of information, communication, and transportation. Secondly, the Tang reinstated the civil service exams, which would provide educated officials to lead the state. Last but not least, the Tang dynasty had enforced an equal field system to distribute land evenly between people. 20% of the land was distributed based on hereditary ownership, while the other 80% was redistributed based on a family size and the land fertility. The Tang even expanded their territory into Korea, Vietnam, Western China, Tibet, and Manchuria. A tributary relationship occurred between the Tang and these nations. A tributary relationship is when nations, in this case Korea, Vietnam, Tibet, and Manchuria, pay a nation so they don't get conquered. The Tang had the belief that China was the Middle Kingdom. In other words, the belief that China was the center of civilization. The careless leadership of the Tang dynasty would lead to their decline. Power began to weaken in 755 with the rebellion of An Lushan. More uprisings would follow as the equal field system fell out of practice. Regional military commanders gained more and more power, forcing the last Tang emperor to abdicate his throne in 907. The Tang dynasty was followed by the Song dynasty, established by Song Taishu. Song Taishu was a successful military leader whose troops made him emperor. In exchange for the emperorship, Song Taishu gifted his generals enough wealth and land that they could retire. With the majority of the experienced military experts in retirement, the army weakened and began to follow the direction of bureaucrats. In this time of peace, the Song dynasty saw administration, industry, education, and the arts as what was important. Unfortunately for them, the Song was struck with many weaknesses. First of all, there was a large class of bureaucrats, and their high salary would cause financial drawbacks. The weak military was not able to hold back nomadic attacks. In the end, the Jurchen conquered the Song dynasty and forced them to move to Hangzhou. Hang Shao was in southern China and would be called the Southern Shang. The Jurchen gave up their nomadic lifestyle and settled in northern China, adopting many traditional Chinese practices. Later on, another nomadic group, the Mongols, would conquer them. The Song, seeing an opportunity to do away with their traditional enemies, actually allied themselves with the Mongols, only to be overcome by them as well a short time later. During both the Tang and Song dynasties, agricultural advances developed, improving the society. Vietnamese fast-ripening rice began to be grown in China, which would cause an increase in food supply. At this point, we should all know what happens to the population when there is an increase in the food supply. Agricultural technology also improved. People began to use iron plows and animals to tend to their land and crops. Irrigation was improved as farmers began to use water wheels and canals to fertilize the soil. The Chinese also began using terrace farming, very similar to the Greeks in the Mediterranean and the Andean societies in South America. As a result of increased agricultural production, population began to increase. Between the years 600 and 1200, the population grew from 45 million to 115 million. The population growth led Chang'an to become the world's most populous city with 2 million residents. Hangzhou, the second Song capital, had 1 million residents. As population grew, China became more urbanized. Porcelain production began and expanded rapidly, becoming a tradable commodity for the Chinese to rival silk. Gunpowder was used in weapons. The first printer developed, which went from a wood block to a movable type. Navigation improved with the help of the magnetic compass. Metallurgy production increased when people began to use coke, or coal dust, instead of coal furnaces. In addition to improvements in technology, a market economy formed in China. Flying cash, which were letters of credit and paper money, began to be used for purchases and taxes. Foreign merchants began to form small communities in large cities, creating a cosmopolitan society. The Chinese economy continued to prosper. The increase of population and the process of urbanization actually led China to become an even more patriarchal society. Wealthy women, who did not have to work in the fields or walk too much, practiced foot binding. Mothers would wrap their daughters' feet at a young age, preventing them from growing and forcing them into small pointed shoes. Over time, the foot would not grow in length, become increasingly deformed. You can do a Google image search if you're curious. The practice of ancestor worship also expanded to include an elaborate grave ritual and extended family gatherings in honor of the deceased ancestors. These ceremonies, of course, were presided over by the male head of the household. During the Tang and Song dynasties, China experienced a cultural transition. Foreign merchants who traveled the Silk Roads brought the ideas of different religions, such as Buddhism, Christianity, Manichaeism, Zoroastrianism, and Islam. The religion which had the biggest influence on China and gained the most popularity was Buddhism. Buddhism began to become popular after the fall of the Han Dynasty, when people began to doubt Confucianism and Taoism. Dunhuang, which was a city along the Silk Roads, is known for transmitting Mahayana Buddhism to China. Mahayana Buddhism was popular in the Gansu province of western China, beginning around 600 CE. Throughout China, Buddhist temples and libraries appeared. Buddhist monasteries were built and focused on helping the poor. Another effect of Buddhism was it set moral standards, promoted intellectual sophistication, and offered salvation during a time when Chinese society, specifically the Han Dynasty, was falling apart. A time when people were living in uncertainty and chaos, doubted their traditional beliefs, and were looking for an escape. Soon Chinese scholars began blending Buddhism with traditional Chinese thought. Buddhism was explained by Chinese monks using concepts from Taoism. For example, Dharma was referred to as Tao, while Nirvana was referenced as Wu Wei. Chan Buddhism, a form which originated in China, was a syncretic faith in which Buddhism appeared with Chinese characteristics. Some call it Taoism in Buddhist robes. During the late Tang Dynasty, Confucians and Taoists began to persecute those who followed Buddhism. During the 840s, Buddhist temples began to close. Buddhism, however, had left its mark and influenced Confucianism to lead to the creation of Neo-Confucianism during the time of the Song Dynasty. Neo-Confucianism mainly focused on the issues of politics and morality. China left a political and intellectual influence on the neighboring state of Korea. The Tang Dynasty's military entered Korea while the Silla Dynasty, a Korean kingdom, was in power. The Silla tried to resist the Tang, but ultimately became a tributary state. China's influence would be seen when the Silla kings made a new capital at Kimsong, based on the design of the Tang capital. In addition to this, the elite members of Korean society turned to Neo-Confucianism, while the peasants followed Chan Buddhism. Despite Chinese influences and the status of Korea as a tributary state, the Silla were able to keep their leaders and operate largely independent of the Chinese. Vietnam was another state influenced by Chinese culture. The Viet people began to adopt the Chinese agricultural techniques, thoughts, and technology. However, Vietnam continued to follow their own religious traditions. Women also held a larger role in society in Vietnam than in China. Overall, Vietnam highly disliked the political dominance China had over them. When the Tang Dynasty fell, Vietnam became independent. So far in our discussion surrounding East Asia, our focus has been on China. But China wasn't the only sophisticated society in the region. Let's move on to another great Asian culture, Japan. Japan was first inhabited by nomads from Northeast Asia. At first, it was ruled by several dozen states, each island having its own king. But later, due to Tang influence, one state took power over all of the others. This began Nara Japan, which was in power from 710 to 794 CE. The capital was the city of Nara, which, like the Korean capital of Kumsong, was modeled after the capital city in China, Chang'an. Although Nara, Japan, adopted some ideas from Buddhism as well as Confucianism, they maintained their traditional Shinto rites and practices. The next phase of Japanese history began in 794 when Heian, Japan, was formed. The Japanese emperor became the figurehead of authority while the Fujiwara family held the true power, a theme we will see throughout Japanese history. The true power rests with the shogun, the military leader of Japan, while the emperor was more of a ceremonial position. Chinese writing influenced kanji, the writing of Japan, and Japanese literature. An important tale in Japanese history is the Tale of Genji, which some refer to as the world's first novel. As we have seen with the rise of every great society, Heian Japan would not last forever. Its decline can be attributed to many reasons, including economic inequality due to land distribution. Aristocratic clans who commanded the more powerful armies under the shogun received most of the land. With that wealth, they were able to establish a strong enough base to take over all of Japan. The most powerful of these clans were the Minamoto clan and the Taira clan. These two families would fight, but only one would win. The Minamoto clan leader claimed the role of shogun and would lead Japan during the Kamakura period. The Kamakura period begins the medieval period of Japanese history and was a time of decentralization. This is similar to Zhou China or medieval Europe in that all of these societies practiced a form of feudalism, where lords, in this case daimyo, grant lands to vassals or knights, in this case samurai, in exchange for military service. The samurai believed in military talent, discipline, and loyalty, and followed a code called Bushido. Bushido was comprised of seven precepts or values. First, justice. A samurai should help those who need it, but also punish those who are deserving of it. Two, courage, especially in the throes of battle. Three, benevolence. Be kind. Four, politeness. Be respectful. 5. Truthfulness. In other words, honesty. 6. Honor. This is an interesting one because it has more to do with how others perceive you and your family, and it could be thought of as reputation. 7, loyalty. Samurai literally translates to one who serves. So the samurai is to remain loyal to his daimyo, the feudal lord who gifted him land in exchange for service. What if a samurai failed to live up to the ideals of Bushido? The only real option was a ritual known as seppuku. Seppuku was when a samurai would preserve his honor by killing himself, by disemboweling himself. Sometimes a second person would shorten the samurai's suffering by decapitating him in the process. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, we will revisit India. Until next time, this has been Mr. Jeffrion's World History Podcast.